You are listening to the OneOfUs.net podcast network.
Hello?
I know you've all been freshly awakened, but I have my own things to deal with, as we are about to have a lovely landing.
Excited. It's Star Trek time.
Oh, okay.
Star Trek time.
Here we go. Nanu Nanu, right? No, that's
I'm
Star Trek thing?
I'm going to smack the misreferencing right out of your mouth.
Is that? May the force be with you.
Okay. You know that you're just trying to aggravate me.
You're a wizard, Chris.
I am a wizard. I'm a wizard of Star Trek, goddammit.
Yeah, I know, because you kept telling me all your Star Trek facts and your... What's the human... organization called in the movie again?
Are you fucking kidding me right now? It's the Federation. You know very well it's the Federation.
Oh, it's the Federation. Okay.
Look at
okay.
you. See, people, this is what I have to deal with.
You have to deal with the passionate Star Wars fans seeing these Star Trek movies.
Hey, I love Star Wars films too, but mm-hmm. you know what? That doesn't change the fact that Star Trek is better.
I think Star Trek... Here's the thing. I will extend... As a Star Wars fan, we're a much easier going bunch than you start.
Wow,
Star,
I've never
Star Trek
seen
fans.
That become
you
true
Trekkies.
Once.
No. I will say Star Trek, I admire a lot of things about Star Trek. I think their world is very interesting. I kind of love that it's a very positive representation of humanity, how we've all come together to form the Federation, and like we put aside all our differences, and it's like, no, we want, this is the best of what we can possibly be, and we want to extend that to all the different civilizations that we come across. It's like, look, even though we're all different, that's what makes us so special. Yeah. And I really think that's unique.
I mean,
as a Star Wars fan, I'm saying this.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. It's like Star Wars ultimately, and this is not meant as a demeaning thing towards Star Wars.
Okay.
It's not science fiction. It's fantasy.
No, I agree. It's sci-fi fantasy.
Fantasy. Yeah, it's like there's no science in it. Everything in it is just transposed fantasy stuff.
Sure.
And there's nothing wrong with that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it works.
Yeah.
You know, with the exception of three of the films, it works.
Oh, I agree with you. Because they're fucking hot, steaming trash. Yeah.
Which isn't to say Trudy that every Richard. Star Trek film has been great either.
Oh, yeah. You can count on both hands. Like, more than that. I need extra hands to count the number of bad Star Trek films.
No, there's truly bad ones, of which I will say there are three. And then there's ones that you're like, this isn't great, but it's not terrible. And then everything else is pretty damn good.
Okay.
Yeah.
I would say, like, Wrath of Khan is really good.
That's the best one.
Yeah. The first J.J. Abrams Star Trek film,
yeah,
really, really
probably
good.
The second best one.
And then, probably, again, I haven't seen all of them, so.
Well, probably six, and then four,
yeah.
And then,
the one with the row your
even
boat.
I lose track on 12, whatever First Contact was. I don't know. It made me mad they had a trivia contest before we saw this movie.
Oh, that's
where they were
so
like,
funny.
How many Star Trek films total have there been? And they did multiple choice, and they gave the wrong number.
Yeah.
And I was like, wanted to scream out, what are you, a fucking moron? You're running the trivia contest.
I mean, here's the thing. Like, even the audience we were with, and, you know, this was, Chris was kind enough to give me an extra ticket to see the previous two Star Trek films before we saw Star Trek.
It was a marathon.
And that was a lot of fun.
In IMAX.
Yeah, in IMAX. So thank you for doing that. But, like, the audience that we were with, they weren't the brightest bunch in the world.
No, I mean, literally, after they showed the first movie, they've already shown the first movie,
mm-hmm.
and the first trivia question is, what Star Trek film was Zachary Quinto's first appearance as Spock?
Yeah.
Like, and the answer is, of course, the movie you just saw.
Star Trek 2009.
It took four tries for someone to get the right answer.
Wrath of Khan. Search for Spock. It's like, guys, it's Zachary Quinto, not Larry
Moy. Oh my god.
Yeah.
Yeah, people were like, I thought this was a Star Wars marathon.
Oh. No, we Star Wars fans, we know our trivia.
Which would have explained why they were so dumb.
No. I'll go into the Expanded Universe right now, Chris.
I'm turning it right back around.
Talk about
you.
Grand Admiral Thrawn.
Yeah, if you're going to be the Grand Admiral Thrawn of this review, you're going to get it right back from me.
No, bring it on.
Yeah.
I'm ready for it.
The Force works in mysterious ways.
Sure it does.
Yeah.
It surrounds us. It penetrates
us. Bullshit. Anyway,
well, it's not.
It's not. It's not. Sorry. I genuinely love Star Wars, so we'll let that go. I'm a Trekkie.
Like Star Trek.
Pure and simple, because it imagines a future that works out pretty great.
Exactly. That's why
Earth gets all shit together. Mm-hmm, you know, it's like, hey, there's no more racism. There's no more gender inequality. Mm-hmm. There's no more like wars on Earth at all anymore.
We're not killing each other because we like different desserts.
Yeah, we're just killing other races.
Yeah. That's true.
But we do everything we can to keep from killing them. And Star Trek Beyond, definitely in terms of where the Federation is now, is borrowing a little bit of the message of Into Darkness, which is that sort of like, it was a tough road early on to get past the, we still want to blow everybody up okay, we are literally just explorers.
Sure. I mean, Romulans and Klans are kind of assholes, so it's like,
Yeah, well, I mean, once again, a lot of patience.
Sure.
Yeah. For other races, but you know, look at where it ended up in the timeline, which you don't know, which is that Klingons and humans, they're best pals.
Are they?
Yeah. Romulans are still kind of dicks.
Oh, okay.
To be fair. But it's like more Cold War in the 80s.
For so long, I thought Romulans and Klingons were the same thing.
No. Romulans are actually related to Vulcans.
That's what
Because when the Vulcans purged their emotions, because they do have emotions, they're just so powerful, they're like, you know, imagine the worst PMS ever and you're that way all the time.
Okay.
Yeah, that was like what Vulcans used to be like. They were worse than Klingons, and they were like, this shit won't stand, so they purged all their emotions.
Right.
And the Romulans were Vulcans who went, no, fuck you, we're not going to do that, that's ridiculous, and they split off, and generations later are basically a different race.
Which I can understand. That's cool, and that's unique, and I can understand why they made that choice.
Sorry, we barely talked about the actual movie.
I
can just talk about Star Trek and everything that goes on it for, like, a 9-hour podcast.
I mean,
be wrong a lot about stuff, but, you know, just because I try to remember, there's so much to remember.
Sure.
One of the fortunate things about Star Trek Beyond is, as opposed to the first two movies, it really wants to be a standalone thing. You know, it really wants to separate itself from, like, feeling like it has to tie into, like, the previously existing Star Treks on the whole. I mean, there's a bit of that, and partially because, of course, there has to be poignant moments in there because Leonard Nimoy, who is existing in this universe as Spock as well, has died in real life, and so they address his character dying, and that comes into that.
They handle it very well, in my opinion. And someone who doesn't have that kind of connection to that character, I understand that meant a lot to fans, particularly towards the end when they do something that I thought was really, really special.
Very, very touching.
Yeah.
Very, very nice. But the story here is, at the end of the last film we saw, they were like, okay, you get your 5-year voyage.
Yep.
Like the way the regular show starts. Here it's 3 years into that voyage, which I didn't expect. I was actually kind of startled.
Yeah.
They're like, they go out there and it kind of starts with Kirk, Chris Pine. He's fucking bored. He's just like, is this really what I was just going to do? He's kind of got this whole idea of like, so what are we doing out here anyway? Mm-hmm. What is that? I mean, like, space is endless. There's literally no end to doing this. So ultimately, why are we even doing it? Why are we looking beyond? And that's one of the goals of the film, is to like explain why we should look at the universe the way Star Trek traditionally does. Why we look beyond, as it were, and want to expand on. And he's even thinking about quitting and becoming an admiral, which they're like, dude, you fucking kicked ass all kinds of times twice already. So.
A grand admiral?
Don't even start with me.
he wants to become a vice admiral.
Spock is actually even thinking about quitting because, as we saw in the last one, Vulcan got destroyed. There's like, I think he estimated like 10,000 Vulcans left in the whole galaxy.
He's a member of endangered species.
So he's kind of thinking like, you know,
I gotta start the fuck.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he's broken up with his lady, Uhura, Zoe Saldana, and because he's like, I feel responsible to my own race that I feel like I should go and make some little Vulcans.
And it makes sense, honestly.
Yeah, no, I mean, I get it. Yeah. I'm like, okay, yeah, that's a reasonable. And he also thinks I'm going to go back and study the Vulcan Science Academy and be more Vulcan-y.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And certainly one of the big dividers between this series and the original Spock is that, well, this Spock is, as much as the original one was so fighting his human side, he was decidedly more Vulcan all the time.
Yeah.
This Spock has, and partially because of the destruction of Vulcan, and definitely more, you know, exclamation pointed in this movie, is tending more towards his human side. is making peace with his human side a lot easier than, you know, Leonard Nimoy's version of the character did, which is an interesting change for the character.
Sure, I mean, it makes it different, which I kind of appreciated, where, again, I'm in dangerous waters for saying this. I'm not the biggest Spock fan even from those episodes, but I like Zachary Quinto's take. I like his take. I'm not saying Leonard Nimoy was bad at all. I mean, I thought that he played a great character. It's just that I identify more with Zachary Quinto's because, he's playing up his human emotions. I can connect with him more on a human level.
Okay. Well, anyway, so this escape pod comes out of a nearby nebula they've never explored, and the one occupant says, who's this alien woman, who says your ship is stranded and it's damaged. Yeah, she's kind of a cool-looking alien. She's weird.
Weird.
The head looks like a weird, like, Georgia O'Keeffe flower.
Yeah. There's a lot. They introduce, like, a lot of new really species in this
really
film.
Elaborate alien makeup in this one.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're like, okay, well, we need to send a ship out to investigate this, and Chris Pine's like, you know what, I'll take the Enterprise.
I need to punch something, so let's go into it.
Yeah, exactly. And they go out there and immediately are taken out by just this massive mega swarm of little ships that just start penetrating into their ship.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're fucked. It's like the first time you meet the Borg. You're like, oh, shit.
They're the collectors from Mass Effect 2.
Yes. Accurate.
That's the one thing. I mean, you can continue on with the plot, but Justin Lin borrows a lot from Mass Effect for this movie.
Hey, man, if don't just borrow, steal. You know?
I mean, sure. I mean, Quentin Tarantino's making a career out of it. So.
Yeah, he is. So they end up crashing the Enterprise, as you do.
Yep. It blows up every other movie,
rather spectacularly.
It's a cool sequence.
This is the best Enterprise crash we've ever seen.
Mm-hmm.
Like, definitely.
Beats When God Needed It and whatever that movie was.
Yeah. the big Starship crashes
sure,
generations
sure.
when the saucer section lands on Earth. And it's like, okay, I look cool. This looks much better.
Yeah.
And it's a big sequence that's a huge action sequence that really sells.
Mm-hmm.
When they get down to the planet, everybody come, all the staff, all the crew separated and with their own little adventures.
The ones that survive.
They find out that Krall, played by Idris Elba, is this alien-looking dude who controls all these people of widely varied alien races.
Yes.
As this crew pilot these things. And he has this ability to regenerate his youthful appearance.
Which they do not explain very well at all.
No, but, you know, that didn't bother me so much. I'm like, whatever. But by literally life force vampiring the life out of him.
Pretty much.
Yeah, which changes his look as the movie goes along.
Yeah, he absorbs the characteristics of different alien species.
Yeah, to 100%
to prolong
a degree,
his life.
But
yeah.
Somewhat of a degree.
Yeah, he's an amalgamation.
But he's chasing after this artifact, which the Enterprise happened to have at that point.
Oh, how convenient.
Kirk, has absconded with, because he's like, well, if he wants it, it can't be good.
Yeah.
So it's kind of a chase thing, as Kirk and this crew that have managed to get away. First up, they've met up with a very sexy alien
yep.
woman, Jayla, played by Sophia Boutella, who's a badass in her own right.
She's gorgeous,
by
the way.
Who had escaped before. She was the one with the sort of bouncing razor legs in Kingsman: The Secret Service.
Yeah, she was great. She was she was the best James Bond henchman that we've gotten.
Yes, she was.
In a long time.
She had escaped from, you know, the prison camps
of
Krall before, and was like, I don't want to even go back. And she's found her way into a old, very old, downed Federation ship.
Mm-hmm.
And basically the bulk of this movie is the crew that got away and are teamed up with her want to rescue the rest of the crew, and Krall wants to find the artifact and just start wreaking havoc around the
universe. He hates the Federation.
Yes. And as
we learn why.
Eventually, in the third act, they get around to explaining why.
Yeah.
And I was really not really into him at all as a villain.
I thought he was the most disappointing Star Trek villain that we've gotten in these new films.
Even the second one, which I did not like, I thought Khan was a much better villain.
Benedict Cumberbatch did a great job.
Yeah.
I mean, was he Carlo Montalban? No, but I thought his take was so cool. And,
yeah, it was just the biggest problem with that movie is the way the whole third act falls.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And, I mean, they kind of sabotaged the third act of you know, this movie. So
they do.
Mm-hmm.
Stealing my joke. less said, the better. I will say there is definitely, despite overall finding that the action holds up in here. There's some really innovative action moments in here that are a lot of fun to watch. There's decent comedy, but in both the previous films, the comedy is better. It's not really even until the third act they start being really funny at all in this, except for Simon Pegg, who, hey, surprise, as one of the writers of the film, gave himself a lot to do in this
movie. God, yeah, and he gets to hang out with the really sexy alien all the time.
Yeah.
He's pretty much like the third main character of this movie.
Oh, yeah. To a certain extent. No, I would totally agree. And that's fine, because he's great.
He is.
He does a good job. I'm glad he got a chance. In fact, most of the characters get a lot more screen time in this, lot more stuff to do than they did in the previous films. Possible exception of Sulu.
I thought Sulu was misused in this movie.
Really didn't get much to do in this one.
What I liked about, what I really appreciate about this film is that how they paired certain characters together that really didn't get a lot of screen time in the previous films together. So in this, you have Kirk and Chekhov, who work really, again, Anton Yelchin does it. Yeah. I think this is probably his best performance as Chekhov.
Oh, he's great here.
I mean, he's great in all the films, but here he's used very well. Agreed. And they kind of introduce a weird thing, which I didn't know if you noticed, but he has like a weird thing for, like, he's attracted to very weird looking aliens throughout the entire movie.
Oh, yeah, he is totally into the aliens.
Yeah, he's like, he's all about it when he first meets Jayla. He's like, he's looking at her like, oh, I want that.
Yeah.
And even towards the end of the movie, he's talking to this, like, crustacean-looking woman who has, like, coral coming out of her head. He's like, he's talking whatever he is about.
The craziest-looking alien at the party, and was like, I gotta tap
I don't think I would ever want to see his search history on Pornhub. I'm just gonna tell you that.
Actually, I would love to see this the porn of the Federation future. I want to see what's going on with that.
Well, they even talk about, like, how on this 5-year mission that they go on, that people are hooking up in space. I mean, they're isolated for so long. And
right in the beginning, they're like, yeah, dude, this fucking all over the place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
But, back to my previous point, though. They pair Kirk and Chekhov, and they have great chemistry, and it really works well.
Yeah.
Same with Spock and McCoy. They have a great moment. They bring out Spock's human side again.
Some of my favorite parts of this movie are really the Spock moments that work because he's teamed up with McCoy, as he is in... He is the one character having the most...
It's the heart and the brain fighting against each other.
Yeah, he has the most effective, character arc in this film, as he's really dealing with more shit than anybody else. His planet got destroyed, along with his mom, who died right in front of him.
No, no,
he died.
That's fucked up. It's like, I'm dead.
The guy's, he broke up with a woman he's genuinely in love with because he feels like it's the logical thing to do.
Yeah.
You know, he's warring with himself.
Yeah.
And it's actually a fascinating journey to watch. Mm-hmm. And it's watching those two, and literally, I can't think of a single other time in the history of Star Trek that Bones and Spock really, in a convincing human way, kind of bonded.
Sure.
I can't think of a single other time that really sold.
And you would know better than I would,
so. And I'm like, wow, this is really works. Where Bones, it's still like, yeah, I love you, man, but fuck you.
you pointy-eared bastard.
Yeah, I love you, green-blooded piece of shit.
And that's the other thing. Carl Urban does a fantastic job. I don't think he gets enough credit for playing this character. He's so damn good. But like you said, the only... Sulu's kind of misused in the movie again, like he wasn't Into Darkness, and like Uhura's doing her thing. Zoe Saldana's okay in the movie.
Yeah,
like she spends a
lot bigger moments in the previous two.
They kind of disappear. Sulu and Uhura disappear with Krull, in the middle portion of the film.
They're there to serve as the characters for Krull to release expositional lines too.
Yeah,
so we start to understand what's actually going on. Mm-hmm. That's their purpose in the film, which doesn't actually give them much to do except for respond with like, "Fuck you, let us go."
Yeah,
you know.
And the other thing, there's two other things I really appreciate about this film. One is kind of like a small thing where they don't just kill red shirts in this movie. They kill all the shirts.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter if you're blue, yellow, or red. I want to ask you, what's the blue? Is that like a designation, the color shirt you have?
Yeah, it's always been very confusing what is what. Like, I know for sure red is engineering.
Okay.
Blue is definitely medical or sciences.
Okay.
Yeah, and yellow is command, I believe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That explains Kirk.
Yeah, and Sulu wears it as well.
Yeah, now, he's like second.
Why Chekhov has always worn red, I have no idea. In the previous movies.
Right.
And in this iteration, he wears yellow.
Okay.
Yeah. Like, in this iteration, the modern
one. Right, he's on the bridge crew or whatever.
So the bridge crew in general, with the exception of the science officer, wear yellow. But I've always been very confused. I think that even they get fucked up sometimes on that. There's a... when we were watching this, like all three of these, there's a moment that I didn't remember at all in the second movie where basically Scotty quits and they send Chekhov, Anton Yelchin, down to work engineering. He's like, all right, dude, put on your red shirt. Like, and the whole audience was kind of like, ooh, like too soon.
It's like at the time, like when that movie first came out, it was funny. Yeah. But now it's like, oh. I mean, you can't, but the thing
you
is.
You can't not help but react. I mean, obviously, you can not judging the film based on that. How the fuck can they?
It's like,
there's no deep. Someone, I'm sure Alex Jones will come up with some Star Trek conspiracy at some point.
Oh, boy,
but,
here we go.
Yeah, it was all the Democrats' fault.
maybe a few decades down the route that. Down the road, the humor will come back to that joke eventually.
Yeah,
so. But for now, it's like, you know. But, and the other thing I really liked about this movie is that I think Chris Pine is the most Kirk we've ever seen him. Where in the first of the J.J. Abrams Star Trek movie, the 2009, and Into Darkness, he's pretty much playing Han Solo. I mean, he's got the Han Solo swagger.
He's playing the 20-something Han Solo that we never saw.
Yeah.
Yeah. The young, fuck you, fuck
Alden Einar Kirker Han Solo.
Which, actually, I really hope that's how he's going to play it.
Oh, I think he totally will. Yeah. But I like the fact that he seemed, and kind of, they showed this in the trailers previously, that he's more mature.
Yeah.
Like, he's definitely, like, he's not the, I'm going to constantly pick a fight, I'm going to punch something.
Well, we saw in Into Darkness that that movie was, one of the purposes it served was to show him humility.
Yeah.
You know, as like, you know, as it, much like it over echoed Wrath of Khan, the one way it did effectively echo Wrath of Khan was about, well, you've never faced death before, which was a big thing with older Kirk, who never has always found a way out and then finds himself in a situation where he really truly believes that's it, they're fucked, end of story.
Yeah.
What do you do? In this particular one, it's the young Kirk having to deal with the same no-win scenario type of thing and sees so many people die because of it. I mean, really, there's a Superman, like, destroying Metropolis sequence in that one towards the end where you're like, you're just millions just died because you made some serious fucking bad decisions.
Yeah.
But, here, he's been, it's post that. He's been in space for 3 years. He's seen a lot.
Yeah.
You know, there's a joke at one point about, like, Bones makes about a giant green hand or something in space. A reference to an original Star Trek episode that even shows up in the end credits. As they're going through space, you see a giant green hand.
Yeah, that was fun.
That was pretty funny little reference.
And the other thing is that he's kind of he has more, like, Shatnerisms to a certain extent. Like, when he speaks, he's like, Scotty, do you think you can do it?
Not like, not to the point where you would like see that he's say he's
no depressed. he's not like, but it's like small hints. It feels like his speech pattern is,
it's because he's calmer now.
He
is definitely the more calmer, collected Kirk, but that part of him that's still the wild child is clearly still there, the one that's easy, you push those buttons and, you know,
he's going to chase after the villain. He's going to stop him as best he can.
And there's some great Kirk Spock moments in here, too. There's a wonderful moment where neither one of them knows the other one is thinking about quitting.
Mm-hmm.
And Kirk goes to Spock. It's like, we make a good team, don't we?
Yeah.
And it's this very poignant, nice moment.
Sweet
where
moment.
These guys, unlike the first two films, these guys have really gotten to know each other, even though we haven't gotten to see all those adventures, have truly become real friends.
Yeah.
And, like, that realization – don't we work much better together than apart?
Yeah.
That's really nice. And I think Trek fans are going to really appreciate that. People who aren't huge Trek fans, I think, are going to come to this appreciating the fact that despite all these things we're talking about that are, you know, definitely for people like me who are just hardcore into these characters and the evolution of them, they work within the context of just this film, too.
Mm-hmm.
This is such a standalone piece. It owes more to the original series than the previous two films do.
It almost feels episodic.
There's a joke even specifically about the fact that it is.
That was fun.
More of a single episode Star Trek thing. Even to a point, there's a point where they were going through these caves that
they
intentionally made them look kind of like the old school sets and stuff.
Made out of styrofoam or whatever.
It was like that felt like a direct call to, like, that was supposed to look like old school Star Trek.
And it's those kind of references that I think work really well, whereas, like, in Into Darkness, it's like, oh, we're going to have a Tribble, and we're going to call attention to the Tribble, and we're going to quote lines from Wrath of Khan.
Yeah.
That's when it doesn't work. But this, I like the references in Beyond much, much
better. I do, too. Yeah. Now, once again, what didn't work, and we can't say very much without going into spoiler territory. You know how people thought that maybe it was a little inappropriate to use a Beastie Boys song in the first two movies?
Yep.
Like, it just felt weird and out of place.
Yeah.
Well, get ready, because those are going to seem like the best decisions ever compared to what they do with the Beastie Boys song in this movie.
Yeah, and I'm sorry for me, it ruined the third act.
It's, in what is a very strong third act, suddenly poisons it so badly that they barely pull out of the nosedive.
Yeah.
And they do pull out of the nosedive, I thought, but it's... Wow, it's a major fuck-up that I can't believe nobody said, yeah, people are going to laugh and go, that's not cool, dude.
I think a couple people may have walked out of the theater,
really?
That we were in. I think, I forget if it was Corey Goodwin who said it or Sammy from Double Toasted. Mm-hmm. They said, I think they saw some people just get up after that.
It's like almost offensively bad.
It was, I was taking it, I looked at you, I'm like, what happened?
Yeah, yeah. I was like, are you fucking kidding me? I mean, not only is it just ridiculous, it doesn't make any sense from the science they're trying to sell it to you with.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, wow.
The force makes more sense than what they do.
I can't emphasize enough how bad that is. Now, while I can still say I like this, I mean, like Into Darkness, I always say the first two acts are overall pretty decent.
Yeah.
The third act is one terrible mistake after another.
Mm-hmm.
Just one huge fucking gaping plot hole after another.
Sure. Super blunt.
Yeah, it's just there's so much that's bad. It's insane.
Yeah.
Here, it's really the only problem is that one thing, and it's a biggie. But ultimately, I think, and this is just going to my final thought.
Yeah, keep going.
Ultimately, I think you are going to have a good time with this, whether you come from the outside of Big Trek fandom or whether you're on the inside. Just prepare yourself to grin and bear it a bit during the midst of one of the big final fights in the film.
You'll know it when you hear it.
Oh, you'll know. You will know. Yeah. Look, Danny Pudi was in here somewhere.
Really?
Yeah, he plays a character named Fija, but he must have been under heavy alien makeup.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, there's a lot of, I mean, like, again, they kind of introduce a ton of different species, which, again, I'm not familiar with all the Star Trek. Are these, like, a lot of alien races that are from the original series?
Oh, shit, man.
There's just, like, a crab.
A big fan.
There's, like, a lady with a crab head.
Oh, yeah, dude, the bitch has the alien facehugger head.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
I was like, oh, my God, she's an alien facehugger woman.
Well, now we know how they reproduce in that species.
Yeah, exactly. there's a wealth of really badass looking alien creatures in this one. Mm-hmm. I mean, there are in all three, but this one especially, they really went hog wild.
The makeup artist, they did a great job.
Oh, yeah, completely. And honestly, a really good soundtrack by Michael Giacchino, who is much more bringing back some of the musical cues from the original television show, more so than the previous two movies were trying to do that from the Star Trek films. This is kind of more cueing in like music from the series. Mm-hmm. And I like that.
Yeah. No, definitely.
Yeah. I overall really enjoyed this, but I will say I think that it's going to go down as one of the middle Star Trek films, you know.
It's going to divide Star Trek fans, but I think audiences, I'm sorry, I'm interrupting your final thoughts, but I think audiences who aren't familiar with it will enjoy it nonetheless.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. I, you know, like if you were doing the list of the ratings of all the films, this would probably sit somewhere nestled right in the middle.
Okay.
Because of the various problems, because it's not as funny as it should be.
No.
It desperately needed some punch up in the first two acts that it didn't have. I mean, the only funny parts are with Simon Pegg, who still, for some reason, is hanging out with his weird little, like, midget friend.
Yeah, well, they said that. I remember before they started production of this movie, Paramount's the studio behind this, right?
Yeah.
They kind of envisioned Beyond as more of a Guardians of the Galaxy than a true Star Trek film, and where they wanted to have Simon Pegg's little midget alien friend be a Rocket Raccoon type.
Huh.
And where he's not, and I'll say he's not in this movie. He's used a few scenes,
yeah,
but not
he's used as much as he is in the previous.
Exactly. Yeah.
He's just there as a mild extra bit of comic relief, and that's about it. I wouldn't agree with Paramount's take. This is much more of a true Star Trek film than the previous two.
No, I think they changed that because of the negative reaction to that when they wanted to make a Guardians of the Galaxy type movie.
So. Probably so. Yeah. I actually think, if it wasn't for the aforementioned issue in the third act, this would be one of the big hardcore Star Trek fans' more favorite of the movies.
I think so, too.
Yeah. Because of the fact that it just feels so much more faithful to the spirit of the original show.
Mm-hmm.
But it's certainly a solid, moving quickly action film that I think audiences in general are going to have fun
Absolutely.
With.
Yeah.
I'm going to give this 7.5 out of 10 really hot aliens that Chekhov would fuck.
You fuck quite a bit in this movie. I miss you, Anton. You did a great job.
Yeah, we do. And thankfully, yeah, people stayed all the way to the end of the credits to see the for Leonard Nimoy, for Anton.
Yeah,
you know,
it's a great
which
moment.
Is like you wanted to be there just to see it on screen. Mm-hmm. And the biggest applause this whole movie got was the first moment Anton Yelchin was on screen.
Yeah,
everybody applauded.
It was that, and like when he first appeared in the first Star Trek film that we saw, like 2009. You know, again, he does such a great job. Yeah, I mean, I'm pretty much right there with you on every single point. For the most part, I liked how they separated the cast into these kind of pairs for the most, you know, other than Uhura and Sulu, who were misused. I mean, it's a very beautiful looking movie, though I will say is that we saw this in 3D in IMAX, and a lot of this movie is in the dark. Like, I'd say a good third of it. Like, there's a couple of scenes when they're on the ship and it's been destroyed and the lighting is not working well. Those scenes are very blurry and, for me, hard to see.
Yeah.
So I would encourage people not to see this in 3D. See it, if it is in IMAX, see it in IMAX, but not 3D, or just see it in a regular theater. I think the majority of the cast does a great job. I love how Justin Lin clearly is a huge fan of Mass Effect. I mean, not only because the villains are basically just their technology is the collectors from Mass Effect 2. There's a space station which is clearly the Citadel where all these different races come together and coexist.
No, but it's super cool to see in live action.
It is, which I'm like, this would be cool to see in a Mass Effect series or movie. but yeah, the biggest to me, other than the third act, which I think falls on its face, and I had a difficult time enjoying the rest of it. The biggest disappointment is Idris Elba as the villain. He is so misused in this movie. Like, we're introduced to him in the beginning, and he just disappears the rest of the film. And we get him in small bits where they're hinting at his hatred for the Federation. And you eventually learn about it, and you go, okay, I mean, that makes sense. It's interesting. The explanation how he has able to prolong his I won't get into spoilers, but how he's been able to survive for so long is fucking ridiculous, and it didn't make any sense to me. And they explain it away using magic science stuff. It's like, whatever.
You mean like the Force?
The Force is mysterious and it penetrates us and surrounds us. It's not bacteria in
DNA. I'm just saying.
but yeah, because it's Idris Elba, and we know he's a fantastic actor. And to me, yeah, that was probably the most disappointing aspect of the film was I expected better of Idris Elba, and hopefully in the next film they'll have a better villain. But for now, I like you, I'd give it 7.5 weird head crabs.
There you go.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm about ready for the series to just, like, it's just time to blow the fuck out of some Klingons for a while.
Yeah.
You know? Like, stop. We don't need references to previous, like, specific people. I just want to see a fucking huge series of space battles with the Klingons and the Romulans, you know, and the Federation. I want to see, like, I want a time travel movie, which fortunately looks like it's happening. Because Star Trek is always, when they do start time travel, tends to be the better stuff that they do. And it's like, guys, it's time for a time travel episode.
We got Beefcake Clark Kent coming in for the sequel.
are you referencing Ghostbusters?
I'm just referencing a character Chris Hemsworth might have played.
By the hammer of Thor, for God's sakes.
Yeah. I'll be interested in seeing that, but like I said, I hope they don't do the whole, you know, they don't like each other because, you know, when between Kirk and Kirk Sr., I hope they don't do that in that film.
Yeah, well, I hope they actually end up best friends.
Yeah, I do too.
And they hug a lot.
Yeah, I mean, those are two very attractive men.
Make out a little.
Yeah, a little bit like that.
Go ahead, grab his chest.
Yeah.
Go ahead, tweak the nipple.
I think,
just a little.
I think Spock would be into that.
Oh, man, Spock dig it the most.
Gentlemen, live long and prosper.